I'm your host, Jess, and joining me today is Jenny, who is our PAT expert naturopath based in Auckland, New Zealand. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Jess.
We're part of Health and Wellness Australia and Auckland, who are a team of naturopaths around Australia and New Zealand that specialise in a natural allergy treatment called Positive Association Technique, or PAT. So summer is here, and for some of us, that means hitting the gym and watching what we eat, especially before all the Christmas feasts. Although since this time of year is so busy, it's easy to be enticed by processed foods that are labelled as healthy or sugar-free in an attempt to cut down on calories. Although many of these foods actually contain sugar substitutes that can cause issues in sensitive people. So today, Jenny is going to give us a rundown of the different types of sugar substitutes commonly found in these foods and the effects they can have on our bodies, especially for those of us with allergies and sensitivities. So to start us off, Jenny, what actually is a sugar substitute?
So a sugar substitute is a food additive that provides food with sweetness, just like sugar, but without the calories. So this might sound good, but they can actually cause digestive symptoms such as bloating or diarrhea, and may also cause you to crave sugar instead of avoiding it. So in this episode, I'll go through the different types of sugar and how they affect your body. And you might just decide that normal sugar, when taken in moderation, isn't actually that bad.
So is sugar not actually that bad for us?
So firstly, we're genetically programmed to like sugar. In nature, when something is sweet, then it generally isn't poisonous. So back in those hunter-gathering days when we foraged for foods, sweet foods were safe. So we still have this memory that sweet is okay, which is why we find it so hard to avoid. And secondly, we actually need carbohydrates to fuel our body and our mind. It's just the type of sugar that we eat that's important. So sugar is a type of carbohydrate, so it's such as fiber and starch. And then although carbohydrates are essential macronutrients, which means they're nutrients that the body uses in large amounts, actual sugar isn't. So carbohydrates give us sugar its most immediate source of fuel. So it's stored in the body in two forms, so glucose and glycogen. So glucose is blood sugar, and it's the brain's preferred source of fuel, and it's transported via the blood all around your body. And glycogen is a lot of these glucose molecules put together and stored in the liver and in your muscle fibers. So glycogen gives our muscles the energy to move and perform, and they're the muscle's fuel.
And how does our body process these different types of sugar?
So interestingly, the brain is the most energy demanding organ in our body. It actually uses half of the sugar that your body needs, but it's the only part of the body that can't store sugar. So because of this, the brain needs to be drip fed it so it can perform all of its functions properly. So sugar, when we talk about it, it comes in the form of complex carbohydrates or refined sugar. So when you eat refined sugar, it's already been broken down, so it's really easily absorbed. And so it goes straight into your bloodstream and then up into your brain. And because the brain can't store this extra sugar, it sends signals to the pancreas to release insulin to get rid of it and store it for later, so to use in your liver and your muscles. So this means that your brain is left with none of that sugar, so you end up feeling tired and grumpy, and it's hard to concentrate. So to combat this, you need to eat complex carbohydrates because they are slowly absorbed by the body, which gives it a constant flow to the brain, which helps you to keep your blood sugar levels even, and it helps to calm your nerves and promote clear thinking. Interestingly, again, most crimes are committed when people are in a hyperglycemic state, which is when they are their blood sugars have gone too high, and they're just in that irrational state of mind. So when you have those complex carbohydrates and they're slowly releasing into your body, then you're much better with your state of mind, essentially. So the good types of complex carbs to eat are whole grains, legumes, and fruit and vegetables.
And what are the main sources of refined sugar?
So refined sugar is an umbrella term for many types of simple carbohydrates, but the most common one is white table sugar, but that's also called sucrose, and it's the most common sweetener that you'd see used in desserts and baked goods and things like that. And so the thing that's a problem with white sugar is it contains no fiber, proteins, fats, or enzymes. So when you eat it, your body's got to borrow nutrients from your cells to metabolize the sugar. And so it's for this reason that you can hear it be called empty empty or negative calories because it depletes your body's precious reserves. Calcium, sodium, potassium, magnesium are all taken from various parts of your body in order to do this.
And what about the natural types of sweeteners?
So sweeteners like fruit juice, honey, molasses, and maple syrup, they contain natural sugar, but they also have some nutritional benefits. So fruit has fiber, vitamins, and oxidants. Raw honey and maple syrup can contain antioxidants and minerals like iron and zinc, calcium, and potassium.
So what happens when we have too much sugar?
So too much sugar can lead to health problems, including high blood sugar, insulin resistance, metabolic syndrome, dental issues like cavities, increased triglycerides, obesity, and type 2 diabetes. So the other thing that's a problem about sugar is it ignites the pleasure reward centers in your brain like other substances such as cocaine. So it's really addictive. And unfortunately, in order to get the same feeling, you need to take more and more of it, which can lead to overconsumption. They actually did this test where they had rats and the rats preferred to take the sugar over the cocaine.
Wow.
So that's how addictive it is. And so the thing is, sugar substitutes are being used more than ever before because lots of people know that, you know, normal sugar isn't that great for you. But they also are plugged because they have fewer calories, or some have no calories at all. And so things like sugar-free, keto, low-carb or diet have these sugar substitutes. And there's three different categories. There's sugar alcohols, novel sweeteners and artificial sweeteners.
So how did these sugar substitutes come about?
Well, those of you who have listened to our podcast before know that I'm really interested in the history of food chemicals and how they've made their way into our diets and become socially accepted. So this is another example of how history has created this monster, essentially. So saccharin is the first artificial sweetener, and this was discovered by accident in 1897, which is actually a really long time ago. So a university researcher was looking for uses for coal tar derivatives, and the story goes that he forgot to wash his hands before lunch, which also appears to happen a lot with these sugar sweetener discoveries. Like, it's been more than one time of research this, and it's been a similar story. And so he tasted something sweet on his fingers, and they figured it out was that it was the benzoic sulfide that was from this coal tar derivative, and it's 300 times sweeter than sugar, but it didn't have the calories. So by 1907, saccharin was already quite commonly used in canned goods and soft drinks, but this is mainly in America. And most Americans had no idea it was in their food. And it was nearly banned for possibly being toxic. But because President Roosevelt's doctor had prescribed it to him for weight loss, he actually allowed it to stay. So it did actually eventually get banned in 1912, but it was reversed during World War I because sugar became so rationed due to its cost and scarcity. They needed something sweet. So saccharin then went from being kind of a controversial chemical to a healthy sugar substitute that the University School of Nutrition even distributed a pamphlet saying it was perfectly safe. And so it kind of made its way back into mainstream life without sort of this bad rap that it had originally had. So then the next artificial sweetener on the block was called salicylamate, and that coincided with the diet soft drink boom of the 1950s. So it was found, I don't know if you've ever remember seeing those pink Sweet and Low packets, and yeah. It was also sweetened by Diet Pepsi. So it's 30 to 50 times sweeter than sugar and has the zero calories in it. So everyone, it's also only 1/10 the cost to make of table sugar. So by 1968, Americans were consuming more than 17 million pounds of it a year. That was until it was proven to cause bladder cancer in rats. So it promptly got banned, and then saccharin came back into favor. So then 10 years later, aspartamate was discovered in a very familiar lick of the fingers kind of a way, and was immediately a favorite because it didn't have this bitter aftertaste that the other artificial sweeteners had. So by 1977, the American FDA was discussing banning saccharin. And so the company that owned aspartame began funding hundreds of safety studies to ensure that it would be able to replace it like it was the, you know, the safe option. But by 1980, a board of inquiry had decided actually that aspartame would be banned as well because it may induce brain tumors. So then surprisingly, a new group of scientists was brought in to review it, but they also voted to continue the ban up until, because at that time there was some of the doctors that wanted to ban it and there were some that weren't. So it was still going in the favor of being banned. But then the head of the board, he put his vote in, and that made the vote go in the favor of aspartame. And so he actually ended up resigning 2 years later because he was accused of accepting money from some of the corporations that he was supposed to be regulating. So it sounds really dodgy to me. So then aspartame was branded NutraSweet, and that replaced more than £1 billion of sugar during the 80s. So Diet Coke was made with that and launched during that time, and obviously was a massive hit. And then there was also Coke Zero that came along later. And the difference between Coke Zero and Diet Coke is only one chemical, and that's a chemical that masks the bitter or kind of that tinny taste that Diet Coke has. So the Coke Zero is exactly the same. It just has this one extra chemical. So then there was another sweetener to come on board, and this was sucralose, and this was branded as Splenda. Now, the difference with this is that it can be baked. So that's a really different thing, because before then it could only go into drinks or in those little packets. And so it was created when scientists bonded the sucralose molecules with chlorine, which again is not a great thing to be ingesting. And it created this product that is 600 times sweeter than sugar. So it's partly metabolized by the body, so it does contain some calories, but not nearly as many as sugar. So it's basically made its way into all of those packaged foods, that anything that's sweet, basically, that they want to say is, you know, low sugar. It's mainly this one because they can bake with it. And so if those facts don't make you wary of artificial sweeteners, they're also considered a neurotoxin and linked with headaches, migraines, anxiety, and obesity.
Gosh, there's quite an interesting history there, isn't it? So how are these artificial sweeteners processed by our bodies compared to sugar?
So artificial sweeteners can actually increase your appetite. So when you eat artificial sweeteners, they can interfere with the natural ability of your body to use the sweet taste and the viscosity of, like, to gauge the calorie content of foods and beverages. So when you substitute an artificial sweetener for real sugar, the body learns it can't use the sense of taste to measure calories. And so the body is fooled into thinking a product sweetened with sugar has no calories, and you end up overeating it. And also, just because the label says it's sugar-free, it doesn't mean it doesn't contain other foods that can raise your blood sugar, like white flour, which is often found in these cakes and cookies, which is, you know, a very simple carbohydrate that's not as very processed. Artificial sweeteners can also cause an increase in your desire for sweet, because they are several hundred times sweeter than sugar itself. You get the sweet tooth effect and resulting in sugar cravings. So the studies show that artificial sweeteners can raise your insulin levels because the tongue is preparing for sugar intake, because it's receiving the sweet message from the tongue. But if this sweet message is sent by the artificial sweetener instead of the sugar, due to this insulin output, the blood sugar levels decrease, and that makes you want, that this basically leads to cravings and wants you to have more of it.
Yeah, and it's kind of ironic that we're trying to use these products to cut back on sugar, but can actually end up making you overeat at the end of the day.
Yeah, so, yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Can these artificial sweeteners also trigger other symptoms?
Yeah. So there's a lot of studies that have come out recently, and there's this correlation between artificial sweetness and headaches. So like many sensitivities, one serving might not affect you at first. It's when the body is constantly consuming these foods as you get that loading dose in your body, and that's when you start to see symptoms. So aspartame is believed to affect your serotonin and your dopamine levels. So some migraine medications contain compounds that will increase your dopamine levels to reduce your migraine symptoms. So after eating aspartame, it can cause the dopamine levels in your body to drop. So that causes the headache or the migraine. And it's also interesting to note that glutamate is a byproduct of aspartame, which is also known to trigger headaches in some people. So we did a whole episode all about MSG and glutamates, which you can listen to that talks about that as well. And so it's also been associated with anxiety, irritability, insomnia, depression, like many other neurophysiological issues. And this is because they're neurotoxins that disrupt the functioning of the nervous system, and they can inhibit the transport of the dopamine and serotonin precursors to your brain. And so they may increase the levels of those excitatory neurotransmitters, so they create anxiety. And they've also been found to cause inflammation and disrupt your all-important gut microbiome, which again would affect anxiety and depression because there's, you know, that massive gut-brain connection.
Yeah, for sure. And what about these other sugar substitutes like sugar alcohols? How are they different from artificial sweeteners?
So sugar alcohols are also used in many processed foods. They're not as sweet as artificial sweeteners, and they do add texture and taste to foods like chewing gum and hard candies. And they also occur naturally in some types of fruits, so the highest of them being in cherries and plums. So they're sweet-tasting carbs that, when manufactured, can be used to substitute the table sugar, but they're also used as a humicant, which is used to keep food moist and preserve it. So it's a really handy thing when you are making food that you want it to have a long shelf life. It's also used in cosmetics a lot to hydrate the skin and things like that. So the most common sugar substitutes would be sorbitol, which is the E number 420, mannitol, which is E421, isomalt, which is E965, erythritol, which is E968, xylitol, which is E697. And all of them have been known to have a laxative effect on anyone, not just people with sensitivities. So they have to state that on the packaging. And so the most common sweetener would be sorbitol. So that's the one that you usually see in all those sugar-free products. And it's the sugar alcohol of fructose. So it actually can cause osmotic diarrhea when eaten in large amounts, which is, you know, relatively high, between 20 and 50 grams. So some people can have this thing called a sorbitol intolerance, which is where the small intestine is unable to utilize the sorbitol absorbed by the food. So then when it moves down into the large intestine, it gets broken down by bacteria, which causes a fermentation process, which releases all these gases, resulting in stomach pain, bloating, headaches, tiredness, and diarrhea. So it's often actually mistaken for IBS. But it's actually the sorbitol intolerance. So you can diagnose this quite so easily with a hydrogen breath test. And so fructose intolerance and hereditary fructose intolerance may also be present with this, because sorbitol has a really similar, is really similar to fructose because they have the same transport and metabolic pathway. So people with sorbitol intolerances, these are the people that if they eat apricots, plums, peaches, cherries, dried fruit, things like that, they'll get these stomach bloating and stomach issues. But it's also in things like ready-made vegetable mixes. It's in your cruciferous vegetables. Things that will say low sugar and calorie or diet products often will have the sorbitol. Like it's really, really, really common. Even baked goods like breads will have it. And interestingly, most sugar-free chewing gums will contain the sorbitol because it's got this ability to have texture. And that can actually create extra bloating, because when you chew gum, you actually are swallowing excess air. So you're creating more gas, essentially, so you can bloat much more. So Also, people who have diabetes should avoid maltitol because despite it's the fact that they used a lot in low-carb products like candies and chocolate, it's actually well known to spike your blood glucose levels. And the erythritol might cause like a sharp taste and like a really, some people, it feels like they've got a burning throat. And so basically all of the sugar alcohols affect the gut in some way. So if any of you have IBS or other digestive issues, I would avoid them.
Yeah. And what about these novel sweeteners, these so-called natural sweeteners?
Yeah, so novel sweeteners are derived from natural sources, and they're kind of the newest group on the market. So they sometimes they call plant-derived non-calorific sweeteners. But they're not, and because they don't have a significant source of calories or sugar, they won't lead to weight gain or blood sugar spikes. So they are better. So they're usually less processed and more similar to their natural sources compared to, you know, the artificial sweeteners. And but they are still chemically made. They're not just like raw versions. So examples would be stevia, allulose, monk fruit, and tagalose. And stevia is probably the most recognized one that's used in the food industry. And that comes from a plant, but it's kind of more similar to artificial sweeteners than the other ones because it's purified and it's highly, highly processed. And many times it actually gets cut with fillers or other sugar substitutes. And interestingly, it's been found to trigger allergic reactions in people who are also allergic to ragweed pollen because the pollen and the sweetener have similar proteins. So stevia is part of the same plant family, which is known to cause these allergic reactions. So there's like a respiratory allergy from pollen exposure from the ragweed. There's a contact dermatitis reaction from the plant proteins of the chrysanthemum. Sorry, and there's food allergies from the sunflower seed. And in Australia, ragweed pollen is actually becoming worse and worse. It's one of those big pollens that have now kind of taken over. So it is definitely around and potentially people could be having this reaction and not even knowing about this connection. And so then also other novel sweeteners include allulose, which is a naturally occurring sugar found in raisins, figs, wheat, maple syrup, and molasses. And chemically, it's similar to fructose, but it's not absorbed by the body, so it doesn't have any calories. But because it's close to fructose, it can cause the bloating and digestive symptoms in some people. And then there's also tagalose, which is naturally found in fruit, but it's usually produced from lactose or dairy sugar, so it's not good for people that have dairy problems. And then there's monk fruit, which is the zero calorie, which is extracted from small green kind of melon-like fruit. And that seems to have the least amount of reactions, but it is also probably one of the ones that that's just only just come out. Like, so there's not as much research. So potentially it could still cause problems.
Yeah, and it seems like at the end of the day, a lot of these sweeteners are centered around marketing benefits. So basically with these more natural sweeteners, it just gives another marketing angle when it comes to these kind of foods, which is a bit confusing for us as consumers. So it seems like these sugar substitutes are just so prevalent now. As much as we can try to avoid them, they are sneaking into more and more processed foods. So we're also seeing an increase in clients presenting with sensitivities to these sweeteners in our clinics. And while there are known side effects, we can still address reactions and sensitivities to food additives like artificial sweeteners with our natural allergy treatment called positive association technique, or PAT. So PAT is performed by qualified naturopaths who use a form of muscle testing to assess your reactions to a range of food and food additive, airborne and chemical substances. We then use a chiropractic tool to called an AcuStim to stimulate acupressure points down the back to help retrain your body's reaction to these substances and provide symptomatic relief. So we work with lots of clients experiencing various digestive issues as well as a wide range of other symptoms. Now, if this is something that you're interested in learning more about, you can look up our website, which is naturalallergytreatment.com.au, and contact us from there, and be sure to subscribe to our podcast for all future episodes. Well, thanks for joining me today, Jenny, and taking us through the history of artificial sweeteners and giving us some insight into the different types that we make come across in foods these days. Do you have any final thoughts?
Yeah, well, look, I don't know about you, but I 100% prefer natural carbohydrates over the chemically altered type. Like, the body knows what to do with sugar and it can utilize it in our body. So, you know, most of these foods that contain sugar substitutes are highly processed and have nothing nutritional to offer. So those of you who are watching your waistlines, you really don't want to be bloating after eating. So instead of reaching for these packaged convenient foods, take some time to read the labels first and see if any of these things are in there, or better still, go home and make something from scratch.
Spoken like a true naturopath, Jenny. Well, thanks again for joining me today. I look forward to chatting to you again next time.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you.